You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, your Friday breakfast show, and you're joining Jacob and me, Chloe, in the studio, and we're excited to be joined by Jonathan Strauss for our first interview. Jonathan is a long-time education worker, a workplace and community organizer, and dad. He's just moved to Brisbane after living in Cairns for 18 years. He was president of the National Tertiary Education Union at James Cook University in Northern Queensland for a decade before moving. And he also worked for years with Rural Australians for Refugees as National Secretary, President and Vice President. He's on the National Executive of Socialist Alliance, and we welcome you back to the show. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi, Chloe. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me on.
Now, we invited you on to talk about Anthony Albanese government's combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremism bill. Well, it's not no longer a bill. It's now passed both houses of parliament. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that means that the law has now changed. And last we had you on the show, it was still a bill being proposed. What can you tell us, Jonathan, what can you tell us about the law, and why does it represent a fundamental attack on democratic rights?
Yeah, thanks, Chloe, and it's also the case that this long description. I have taught in the area of political science as well, having qualified a PhD in that area, so I actually can discuss this most of all politically. I think really we've got to look at laws in terms of what they are on about. They are really they are one of the things about laws is effectively they are meant to be coercive. They provide coercive powers through the chance of arresting people, jailing people, etc. But that's actually also to enforce consent. So this is not decided. And the question is, will we consent to what's going on? Because what's going on, in fact, in practice, politically, is this is openly against the Palestine Solidarity Movement. This is where it's come from. This is what the supporters of the Israeli state have been calling for, both, I guess, those who openly identified as Zionists and supporters of Zionism, and the government more generally, in the fact that it actually is supporting the Israeli state, including providing weapons parts to the Israeli state. It's not just about extremism, and in fact, you've got to ask then, if people talk about it, you always got to ask the question, to whom? Is something extreme? It's also a certain kind of development. Up to now, we've seen a lot of attempts to suppress, say, the actions of environmental activists, particularly the direct action tactics, mostly from the state governments, but now we have this law. Because what we're looking at is, if you want to change the world, you need popular, democratic, powerful movements. And this law is targeted most especially, and this is in the words of the Attorney General, in particular when Michelle Rowlands, and she was interviewed on 7:30, but what she was asked, if people, when I opposed the genocide, and since that brought into the question the existence of the Israeli state as it is now, as an apartheid state, you know, and if Jewish people said they were feeling harassed or intimidated by that, would that trigger the process? And she said yes. So that's its political operation. Look, legally, I definitely take my lead from people like the constitutional lawyer Anne Toomey, and she's been writing in a number of spots, including Conversation, Pearls and Irritations and the like. Greg Barnes has been speaking on this. Nick Hanna, who's the lawyer for the case against the New South Wales laws that are being introduced, did a seminar last night, which I need to catch up on. The other thing is, talk about catch up on. This is all happening in incredible flurry. The laws themselves introduced within a week, more than 140 pages in its initial form, and it included the gun laws. Then amended, and the amendments were very substantial, and it went into Parliament at the beginning of last week. Last week, it's hard to keep up, and so on. So to keep all that up, I want to focus just in terms of your question of how it's an attack on human rights, just on the organisation ban laws, which effectively introduced the central concept of hate crime that then also applied in areas around the question of symbols. So the same banned hate, so-called hate, you know, ostensibly hate crime groups, and also migration laws as well. So there's probably three kinds of things. I'll go through those briefly. One was raised by Ben Saul, who's the UN reporter on the question of anti-terrorism laws and democratic rights, and he points it out in his initial submission. And this goes across some different provisions of the existing laws, because while the initial one actually included a racial vilification more around promotion, what was said to be promotion of hatred or ideas of superiority, he pointed out that in terms of legal terms, you really need to focus on incitement, something more about provoking actions, because otherwise you really cut across actually human rights in terms of freedom of expression. But because that's in the objects, it doesn't actually isn't actually in the law that you'd actually be, in a sense, something you'd be charged with. The key question probably folds around the issue of how they're trying to define hate crime. The one question is the concept of hatred. I mean, the New South Wales Law Commission was asked to look at this sort of question a couple of years ago and just said hatred is not a good idea. That's a concept in law because it's just too much different understanding of it in society as a whole. The second thing they've done, and what they actually did was they took some of the provisions out of the racial vilification laws that had to drop because people were just pointing out how undemocratic that was, and put it into the banning of organisations law instead. But they also put in this thing saying that one of the things that would be involved would be people suspected of breaking, as I'll get to shortly, but probably talk about in a minute, but breaking state or territory laws. And there's actually a lot of different laws, and some of them have concepts like severe ridicule as opposed to other kinds of conduct, which it raises issues about how the law would work. But the key question here is actually that they actually took over a concept about the reasonable person who's going to judge whether or not someone is fearful for their safety or intimidated and some other kinds of similar things is no longer just the reasonable person in general, which itself is a problematic concept, you could say, in the sense that you apply that norm to, you could say, basically, it's not taking account of First Nations people. It's the reasonable person typically would be someone in a colonial white framework, for example, and I'll do the other divisions there as well, but now it's a targeted group. So that sounds like maybe, oh, we're going to take account of people's experiences. But the other side of that is actually it's even more obvious how this reasonable person is socially constructed. And this is particularly clear. There's an open campaign to socially construct Jewish identity to include Zionism. And this occurs around claims that, a majority of Jewish people, which, look, is only to the extent it's been true, it's only been true really since the Second World War, and in any way that support is fading, but somehow because they might support Zionism, the ideology of settler colonialism in historic Palestine. That means somehow that's part of their of Jewish identity. That's one problem. The second thing is the use of the what's called the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism, which actually has some examples that actually tend to, if you ignore, if you ignore its provision around using context, equate criticism of Israel with anti-Zionism, and certainly that's something you see politicians trying to falsely do all the time. This all cuts across political communication, and Timmy points it out very well, that in fact what it means is where normally you could criticise, wherever you can actually try to say that the ideology that supports an ideology of an ethno-nationalism is actually somehow part of the identity of the nationality or the ethnicity, suddenly you have this situation where criticism of the nation state suddenly becomes, which is obviously political in the communication, suddenly becomes unfree again. Whereas we do at least have an implicit right in the from the Constitution around elections that in fact should be free. The other thing, sorry, and that's quite complicated to explain, the other thing is just that it says not only formal members but informal members and of groups that are banned are then subject to being prosecuted and jailed for 7 to 15 years, depending on the situation, also elements of support. So, and really all of this is, there's no limit indicated in what that actually involves. And in fact, informal just means not formal. So I'd say, basically any form of association, I guess joining a march for Palestine could be perhaps be seen as being part of some group that supports Palestinian solidarity, which they then proceed to ban. So that becomes a really basic problem of knowing, where the limits lie.
Yeah, so thanks for that kind of very kind of detailed explanation going through kind of all the kind of bill. I guess I want to kind of ask about the question of kind of the repression of the Palestine movement. Very much how is this bill going to be used as an attempt to consciously kind of repress the Palestine movement, even though, as we'll go into another question later, it is obviously targeting groups on the other end of the political spectrum, not just necessarily the far left.
Okay, I think it mainly does it by the fact that a lot of people discussing it is very ambiguous and uncertain what will happen. So everyone will be asking himself, what can I say? What can I do? I don't know, because I don't know what they will use either from the past. Well, sorry. So what they're also saying is they can take what happened in the past plus what they think will happen in the future and use that to decide on whether or not there'll be a ban on a group. So firstly, you had no idea that this was coming up in the past. So, things may have been said in a way which they will use and so on. There's a tremendous amount of ambiguity and uncertainty. It all operates on the basis of suspicion and prediction. There's no requirement to actually be any crimes need found to have been happened for a group to be banned. So, but mainly, as I said, it's this question of enforced consent. People will worry and not say things because they worry that the ban will apply and then everyone will be considered to be associated with these groups in some way, perhaps as an informal member, perhaps in providing support or whatever. That's one thing. A second thing is that because what it says, basically it's all carried out in the executive, in the state. ASIO is going to draw up a proposal that a group should be banned, and then the minister who is governing the federal police actually makes the decision. They have to refer to a couple of people about that, but basically the Attorney General, and we heard what the Attorney General thinks. Yes, you can ban Palestine groups, Palestine solidarity groups. They're saying that there's a genocide, and that this brings into question the right of a state to exist, you know, because, you know, which is actually what the, you know, like the US Declaration of Independence says, tyranny is grounds for rising against a state. So, you know, if genocide is not grounds for rising against the state, is an interesting question. And that, all of this proceeds with no procedural fairness applying against the minister. Now, what exactly that means in terms of any sort of judicial review, I think, is unclear. But, I mean, at least, obviously, it protects the minister from making a decision that's not procedural fairness. That basically means you don't get heard on the question. This could be compared with something like what's happening in Britain with Palestine Action. Now, that's been banned as a terrorist organisation. The decision is wrong because it basically hasn't conducted terrorist activities, for starters. But in Britain, at least, you know, they've had some court hearings, and one of the grounds that the judicial review is going to go ahead is because Palestine Action was not heard on the matter. Whereas here, that's not even a requirement. So it's not even clear to me that, in fact, you could even go and say we weren't heard on the matter, therefore this should be reviewed. But because that's actually allowed. One other big issue is it's about thought conduct, about what people express rather than what they do as such. And it's criminalised regardless of intent. The intent's only relative to the degree of punishment. One of the things that come up on the left is some people saying, oh, well, you know, can this be fixed? Well, I have a feeling I've probably spelled out why it can't be fixed in terms of the question of defending democratic rights. Can it be fixed in terms of the fact that it's applying only to questions of race, ethnicity and nationality, and not also addressing questions like the hatred against trans people and the queer community more generally and so on? I think in this government we just have to remember that fundamentally we can't rely on the state to defend our democratic rights. Mm. We need to win. If we want to win, we want to win politically. That is, we want to overturn the old social structures, the old set of ideas and ideologies that are dominant now, which are against people's democratic rights. We need to win that politically. That's the fundamental thing that needs to be done.
Well, this is all very interesting, Jonathan. And for listeners just tuning in, we are Green Left Radio. We are speaking with Socialist Alliance activist Jonathan Strauss about the new legislation which passed the Senate on Tuesday night, allowing the federal government to ban groups deemed to spread hate, with leaders to face up to 15 years in prison. Jonathan, actual hate groups like neo-Nazi groups, for example, the National Socialist Network, are being targeted under this law. What are your comments about that? Do you think this effectively addresses the issues of the far right?
I wouldn't say so. And as I said, if things are really determined politically, then you have to ask how you could argue this has an effective role against the far right in the context of the really muted political and media response to the attempted bombing of the Invasion Day rally in Borloo in Perth. That's where I would sort of say, if you want to look at one of the ways this is working out in practice. So the National Socialist Network, you know, announced it was dissolving itself. And look, you can see that they picked that, yes, indeed, they would be up for prosecution under the laws. But this society is riddled with racism. So they can operate in other ways. They will be able to operate in other ways. So in introducing laws, it's certainly a statement about, from current establishment politics, from the Labor Party's politics, that doesn't want fascist tactics. What do they fear? Well, I actually say what they fear is the backlash that's possible through a strong solidarity and anti-racist movement such as the Palestine Solidarity Movement is and could develop into. At the moment, they think they can defeat it in another way. They can defeat it in the ways they want to operate, that they don't need fascist tactics to do that. They don't need thug groups to win. Of course, they might change their mind in future. That's what certainly the historical experience is, that capitalist politics does that. It uses fascism when it needs to defeat revolution. But that's the basic scenario. Also, just look at the political results. The far right is actually coalescing and growing stronger. We're actually moving into a situation more like some of the situations in European countries, where it is, you know, where in, you know, we have on the right has become the far right. The left, of course, needs to fight for democratic rights. And in fact, fudging it all in the middle is the sort of centrist politics of Labour parties or the Macrons of the world and so on. And in fact, in the long run, unless we actually mobilise from the left and the defence of democratic rights, the defence of people's freedoms, to defeat the far right, that centrist group will fall and the far right will come to power.
All right. So I want to go into the... Well, we're just running a bit out of time now and we want to kind of conclude this kind of interview, but we do have one last kind of question that kind of brings it back to this whole discussion about the combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremism bill. So, Jonathan, we want to hear your final comments, but I also want to kind of hear your response to this kind of question about, you know, what is the solution? How do we develop effective anti-racism laws that actually protect people from discrimination? What are your comments on existing laws around racial vilification?
Okay, so we do have existing laws. I mean, we do have existing laws that deal with questions like violence, including racially motivated, you know, which would include racially motivated violence. On vilification, look, the key question probably is changing the political scene, because that would open up the discussion more generally for people to act and lead to a different understanding of what racism actually is. And it would also help empower people to use the existing laws. Rather than have these laws that actually cut across people, the freedom of expression and the right of political communication.
Really, these laws, these criminal and migration laws, are not to combat hate, it's to control us.
We've got to realise that the migration laws have been used to stop figures in the past, like Gerry Adams, leader of the Irish struggle, coming to Australia. That was actually overturned, but the introduction of these laws would actually strengthen the capacity to stop that happening as the governments continue to try to do. The other thing is directed against is refugees.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you very much, Jonathan, for taking the time to come on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And, yeah, you can... read some of Jonathan Strauss's articles in Green Left, but we're going to go to a short break and come back with the Green Left calendar. Thanks, Jonathan. Have a good morning.
You too.